the Denver Broncos and Seattle Seahawks reached agreement on a trade that will send 9-time Pro Bowl quarterback Russell Wilson to the Denver Broncos in one of the biggest NFL trades in NFL history, an enormous package of players and picks going back to Seattle.
That was Adam Schefter, ESPN's Human News Alert, announcing one of the biggest trades in NFL history. A culmination of not just highly secretive negotiations that nobody saw coming, but also a football news cycle that took over my phone this week and still hasn't given it back. Because yes, Russell Wilson is somehow a Denver Bronco, suddenly. And yes, Aaron Rodgers is somehow, after a year of very public drama, still a Green Bay Packer. And right, oh yeah, before that, a star receiver also got suspended for all of next season for betting on NFL games. So today, Bill Barnwell makes us smarter about a football news cycle unlike any other. And he explains the aftershocks to come. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, March 9th. This is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Bill, as someone whose main goal in life at this point pretty much is to not get fooled into retweeting a fake trade announcement from, like, any number of the parody Twitter accounts that populate social media, I gotta say that my brain immediately sent this Russell Wilson trade into its spam folder.
I did the triple check. I did the make sure the person who I saw retweet it was a real person, make sure the person who actually initially did the report is a real person. And then I just checked in my brain to make sure that there wasn't more than one Russell Wilson in the NFL. And maybe I was just getting the two of them confused.
Yeah, I had to go and make sure, wait a minute, this is Adam Schefter, not Adarn Schefter.
That's the name brand, Adam Schefter parody account. That's the one you go to the store and get. If you go to Costco, you can get like Adam Schefter, but I appreciate that it's the real one.
Yeah, the Hydrox is Adam. Yeah, Adarn. That's the one that we all know and are terrified by.
Sure.
But look, man, like the whole NFL internet is pretty drunk right now. Like we're talking and it's Tuesday night and like the Seahawks were posting a Tom Hanks Castaway meme. And then because someone pointed out, I guess, that that's a terrible look for a team whose fan base is like traumatized by this trade. They decided, okay, let's delete this thing. Speaking of traumatized, like Mina is just posting continuously through all of this. And I'm a little worried about her, even though she's like dunking on the Arizona Cardinals right now somehow.
It's really incredible. I think you're just seeing so many things go in so many different directions. And I really appreciate that. Even though this could have happened over a number of weeks over the last few weeks, the NFL decided to cram all of this into exactly about 3 hours right after we finished a fake TV show.
Yeah, a fake TV show, incidentally, debatable, wherein we laughed explicitly at the idea that the Denver Broncos had any move to make in order to get Russell Wilson after missing out, of course, on Aaron Rodgers, who just re-signed with the Green Bay Packers approximately 3 hours before this.
There were like 3 or 4 big NFL stories that were totally forgotten by the time we got to lunch on Tuesday.
Yeah, Calvin Ridley, the number one receiver on the Atlanta Falcons, who we may talk about later, he got suspended for a year because of betting on NFL games. And that barely cracks the medal stand of stuff that we have to talk about here.
It's really fascinating. And I think Roger Goodell probably gave the Broncos and Seahawks a quick pat on the back for burying that story this afternoon.
But Bill, let's talk about this trade. Let's talk about this trade that feels like that image we see of that shark that swims through like the freeway during hurricanes. This thing that I'm pretty sure was fake, but maybe actually is real suddenly somehow. Because Russell Wilson getting traded from the Seattle Seahawks to the Denver Broncos, pending, of course, Russell waiving his no trade clause and passing this physical. I mean, what this deal has done is change kind of everything in terms of the power balance of the NFL. And there are domino effects we'll get to. But I just want to start with the fact that just as recently as the NFL Combine, which was last week, Pete Carroll, the head coach of the Seahawks, told everybody definitively that there was nothing specific going on in terms of trade talks involving Russell Wilson.
So it's the same as it's been. We have no intention of making any move there. But the conversations, John has to feel those he always has, but nothing specific to that.
And so, yeah, this was just going to be all talk, no action. This is just classic media bloviating. But now we have the action, Bill. So what were your first impressions from Denver's perspective in terms of them suddenly getting this quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about the last game we watched. And that was the Rams winning the Super Bowl. And the guy who won that game at the very end was Matthew Stafford. And Matthew Stafford did not always have the most impeccable season. He was not perfect. He made a bunch of mistakes. But when the Rams needed someone who could come up with a big drive at the end of that game, who could hit that no-look pass, they went out and got Matthew Stafford. And I think that inspired teams. You know, I think that there were teams out there who watched that and said, you know what? Why are we waiting? Why are we trying to do things the right way, quote unquote? Why are we, you know, trying to find that guy in the draft? Why are we holding on to these picks? I don't think they were saying those picks like the Rams famously said on their shirt. Yes. But I do think there was that feeling of, oh, maybe this is another way to do things. And maybe we should make that offer that we wouldn't have made a year ago for a franchise quarterback. And I can't say that's the case for Denver, but the first thing that came to mind for me is that maybe this trade happens because Matthew Stafford won the Super Bowl with the Rams, not only because it, you know, dropped the Seahawks further into the basement in the NFC West and maybe makes them worried for years to come that they can't compete there, but on top of that, also emboldening teams to go out and make an all-in offer for a veteran quarterback, thinking that's the difference between them winning the Super Bowl and being a team that sort of falls flat before the postseason or in the postseason.
And in terms of the them picks sort of aspect of this, right? I mean, the trade was Drew Lock, the quarterback, Noah Fant, the tight end, Shelby Harris, the defensive tackle, and then two first rounders, two second rounders, and a fifth rounder headed from Denver to Seattle in exchange for a guy who makes them what now, Bill? I mean, realistically speaking, how good are the Broncos now because they have Mr. Right suddenly? Because they didn't wait around for Mr. Right to fall to them, they decided we're going to go and get him ourselves.
Well, I mean, they're better. I think we could start there. Like, they are much better. They had Teddy Bridgewater, who was competent last year and who has been a guy who can, you know, hold his own, but certainly they have not had someone of this caliber since Peyton Manning was actually sort of in his pomp. I know they won a Super Bowl with Manning in his final season, but he was being carried by both arms, yes, by DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller. This is a total shift for them. They've had the fourth worst quarterback play in the NFL since Manning retired by QBR. Russell Wilson has been the sixth best quarterback in football over that time frame. The thing I would say, though, I think it's so tempting to make those Rams comparisons, say, okay, well, you know, the Broncos have those weapons. They have a great defense. You just plug that quarterback in and they're going to be able to do what the Rams did. And there's a couple reasons I don't think that's the case. Number one, we'll get to the competition in a second. But number two, I don't know if this team is as good as the 2020 Rams were. Rams were 10-6. They were the ninth best team in the league that year by Football Outsiders DVOA stat. They were number one in the NFL in scoring defense. The Broncos, they have some promising players on defense, and they are certainly not lacking for weapons on offense, but they were 7-10 a year ago. They were third in the league in scoring defense, but not quite as impressive by DVOA. They were 18th in the NFL overall in DVOA. So the Broncos are basically about an average team with a tough schedule last year. And I think you have to keep that in mind in terms of what they're going to get out of Russell Wilson.
Well, the question of whether the Broncos, which you basically just described there, Bill, as like a team that played pretty average in 2021. Yes. I mean, the question of whether they were just a superstar quarterback away becomes even more pressing because the other quarterbacks in the AFC West are ridiculous.
Yes.
I mean, that's Patrick Mahomes' territory. That's Justin Herbert's neighborhood. That's where Derek Carr still lives. And I get that everybody else, like as a fan, I love the fact that we're going to get all of these matchups twice a year, every year. But the distribution of talent under center here, what does that do for our realistic expectations of how this all might go this season?
I think it raises the bar. I think Russell Wilson has to be really, really good for the Broncos to feel confident that they can be a Super Bowl contender. And I think it makes the Stafford trade a little more impactful, which maybe we couldn't have known at the time. We didn't know Russell Wilson was going to get hurt. But I do think that it's going to be so tough for the Broncos to ride this Wilson transaction to, you know, anything like a guaranteed playoff spot, let alone a guaranteed Super Bowl contender spot, because like you said, I mean, Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert are in the division. Derek Carr, who, by the way, like pretty good. I mean,
right?
You know, not like he's like a joke or anything, is the fourth best quarterback, presumably, in his own division. Josh Allen is lurking in the AFC East. The North has Lamar Jackson, who's won an MVP, and Joe Burrow, who just led the Bengals to a Super Bowl. Deshaun Watson, who may come back to the Texans, might be the seventh best quarterback in the AFC on paper. It really is just a absolute run of dominant quarterbacks.
Right. I mean, Bill, man, we just got another NFL news item today about Deshaun Watson, because nearly a year after all of those allegations of sexual misconduct against him were publicized, we're now hearing that several women who filed criminal complaints against him have been subpoenaed to appear before a grand jury on Friday, imperiling all of the expectations that Deshaun Watson is just going to be, you know, back in the league anytime soon. But all of this is to say that the AFC has like a Mortal Kombat ladder of quarterbacks. And I'm just curious where Russell Wilson to you slides into that. Where does he rank?
Oh, boy. This is just going to get people angry at me on Twitter, Pablo.
I mean, not only...
You're combining like people who are nostalgic for specific 90s Mortal Kombat characters with ranking NFL quarterbacks. Just a nightmare. I would have Russell Wilson as like, oh boy, maybe the Raiden or the Liu Kang of the AFC, which
a classic, maybe, sure.
A classic for sure, but maybe not your first pick. I think they're sort of Mahomes and Allen maybe in a tier by themselves. Burrow, Jackson. I would say he's probably ahead of Herbert. Maybe as the fifth best quarterback in the AFC. But I think Chargers fans would probably get angry at me for saying
that.
And have
I'm kind
a decent
of angry
case
at
for
you
doing
for saying
so.
That, Bill.
Well, we can settle it with a game of Mortal Kombat, Pablo, if necessary. And I think to contrast that to the NFC, I mean,
there's
not a lot there anymore. I mean, Tom Brady has retired. Russell Wilson now has left. You know, guys like Matt Ryan have declined. Carson Wentz was supposed to be a star there. He's declined. Jared Goff was supposed to be a star in the NFC. He's declined. I mean, the future of young quarterbacks of the NFL as recently as a few years ago felt like it was based in the NFC, where you had Goff and Wentz breaking out. You had Dak Prescott emerging. And then kind of over the last couple of years, it's been more on the AFC side. We've seen Patrick Mahomes emerge as an MVP. Lamar Jackson emerges an MVP. Josh Allen emerges a MVP candidate. So this stuff kind of comes in cycles. Teams who need quarterbacks just happen to be in one conference or the other. But the AFC is going to be an absolute slugfest this upcoming season.
Yeah, it is crazy that maybe Russell Wilson just sneaks onto the medal stand in his own division in terms of quarterbacks, which is not incidentally how I would sell this transaction if I am the person responsible for selling the Denver Broncos right now. Because that's the other huge aspect of this story, Bill, is that the Broncos are up for sale, and this deal, to be clear, is awesome news for the future owner, I would imagine. But how does this impact the value of a franchise, getting a huge name like this?
Yeah, it's complicated, because I think on one hand, when you think about teams that are being sold, you typically don't expect them to spend money. Like, if anything, they sort of try to cut money. They try to cut their future liabilities and...
Like a gut renovation of a brownstone as opposed to buying something that's, like, ready to move into.
A very New York-centric expectation of what of the market there, Pablo. But yes, absolutely. I mean, you are trying to have as few liabilities on the ledger sheet as possible, but you also want to have a good quarterback. You also want to have something to maybe take that person who's willing to spend $4 billion on your franchise and give them a reason to want to go to games each and every week. So I think Russell Wilson's going to get an enormous deal, maybe as early as when this transaction does actually occur in March. Now, I think the Broncos are going to get sold either way, and I think that it's going to be for a number that starts with four in either scenario. Mm. But I do think that there was a sort of pause within the organization that might not have been there with a more stable owner and a more sort of stable ownership for the years to come.
Yeah, Mr. Unlimited, both the nickname of the Broncos' new quarterback and also the nickname of the new owner as finances and liquidity might go. But in terms of what Seattle's getting in return, Bill, let's get to their perspective on this. Because again, they're getting Drew Lock at quarterback, Noah Fant at tight end, Shelby Harris on the defensive line, two first rounders, two second rounders, a fifth rounder. I mean, this is the kind of a haul that is both a lot, and B, the sort that actually made me afraid to text Mina Kimes. Because it doesn't seem like she's a huge fan of this move long term for the Seahawks. So what do you think? I mean, Pete Carroll, the head coach, and John Schneider, the general manager, are still in power. This is a move that solidifies their control over things. If you believe that Russell Wilson was in conflict with them in terms of how to steer this organization into the future, what do you make of this?
Ooh, I mean, Pablo, this feels like an ideological shift for the franchise. I think I'm going to start there, more so than the picks, more so than the players. Pablo, what is the thing or sort of the debate we've had about the Seahawks for the past several seasons when it's come to what they want to do?
Yeah, do we let Russell Wilson cook?
Yes. And the fact is we're having that debate. Like, we have to be sort of, we're not talking to Pete Carroll directly, but there's this argument between sort of the broader public perception of what the Seahawks should do and what Pete Carroll wants them to do, which is run the ball, play good defense, and be sort of a team that wins the way teams would win in 1989. And there's nothing wrong with that. You can win games that way, but it's at odds with not only what the Seahawks are good at, but also where they're spending their money. Russell Wilson was one of the highest paid quarterbacks in football, and they had gone from a team that won a Super Bowl, by the way, when they had a very cheap Russell Wilson and a very talented defense and a very effective running game built around Marshawn Lynch, to a team that has not been able to defend very well, that has one of the worst pass rushes in football, and has been very frustrated at times with Russell Wilson wanting to throw the football more often. Outside of that sort of half season in 2020 where the Seahawks did let Russ cook, this has been a team that's sort of been battling with itself. And so to me, I think that this is, from Seattle's perspective, an ideological shift back to what Pete Carroll thinks wins football games, which is not spending a ton of quarterback. It's not about throwing the ball 45 times a game, but throwing the ball 25 times a game, running the ball a lot,
yeah,
and playing great defense and sort of realigning what this franchise has to work with in terms of their roster and in terms of their cap construction with what they think wins football games.
Well, Bill, it's clear that Pete Carroll and John Schneider want to be the only cooks in the kitchen in terms of like who's deciding what the hell is going to happen to this franchise. And you referenced the fact that they had this great success with young Russell Wilson and that defense and the running game, you know, a decade ago now.
Yes, absolutely.
But since, it feels like their resume has not been as stellar.
I agree. Certainly, I think if you want to make the argument that nobody is good at drafting and that nobody is able to year after year kind of deliver beyond what their sort of draft capital is, I think the Seahawks are the example where John Schneider had maybe a couple of the most impressive drafts in NFL history.
I mean,
he found Russell Wilson in the middle rounds. Russell Wilson's going to be a Hall of Famer. He found Bobby Wagner in the middle rounds. Bobby Wagner is going to be a Hall of Famer. He found Richard Sherman in the middle rounds. Richard Sherman is going to be a Hall of Famer. Everything about that would make you think that John Schneider and Pete Carroll were going to be great drafting moving forward, and their drafts have been pretty bad, honestly, over the last 7 or 8 years. They've made some very questionable decisions, and I think that sort of is where I worry.
Well, Bill, yeah, no, if they are now in this chopped challenge and their ingredients are all these draft picks that they just got from Denver, the real question here is, well, what are you guys going to actually cook up?
Well, that's the thing. And I don't know that what we've seen from them over the past few years proves that they're not going to be able to do it, because we did see them succeed drafting players in the past, and they've had hits here or there. I mean, getting DK Metcalf with the final pick in the second round a couple of years ago is a fantastic pick. But I think the question to me is, when you trade Russell Wilson away and you don't have a clear path to a replacement at quarterback, is it really worth it? Now they have Drew Lock at quarterback and they have Jacob Eason, neither of whom project to be a viable NFL quarterback. So I think even if the Seahawks do draft well with those picks, if they don't get a quarterback out of those selections, I think that's going to make this trade a miss, even if they land guys they might want with the ninth overall pick and the picks they got from the Broncos.
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated. Like, how confident is the Seattle Brain Trust in terms of how big a risk they want to take with these picks? Are they going to use the basket ingredients? Are they going to get cocky and try to use the ice cream machine in their challenge? I mean, that to me is what you do with the ninth pick. You go and take a quarterback. But maybe, well, Bill, you sort of mentioned Drew Lock, right? Like, that's the guy who's now the incumbent. And that's a guy who is incidentally most famous for an animated GIF of him rapping Young Jeezy on the sideline as opposed to like an actual play. But what do they do with the ninth pick? Right?
I think Drew Lock might be the ice cream machine in this scenario. I'm not sure. It's either him or Matt Araiza, the crazy puncher we talked about on Debatable today. I mean, I think they could go in a few different directions, and it sort of depends on what happens in front of them. I think, you know, this trade did happen right after the combine, where the Seahawks would have had opportunities to explore quarterbacks and talk to quarterbacks and look at what quarterbacks did, you know, sort of in front of them in Indianapolis. This is a trade that happened for a team that, frankly, like, Pete Carroll's a lunatic. I mean, yes. He's not going to tank. The idea that they're going to make this trade and then just sort of, you know, wither on the vine for a year and then try to compete in 2023.
Bill, Pete Carroll was born in 1951. He doesn't have time to tank. This is about the now.
It has to be. And so to me, I think either they have a quarterback they are in love with who they think they can land with the ninth overall pick, or they have a veteran that they are going to land in the next few days in free agency or via trade.
Wait, so okay, those free agents that may be on the table for the Seahawks, where does your brain go in that? Where does your brain go in that regard?
Well, there's reports today, Pablo, one of the other breaking news pieces, or at least rumored pieces today, is that Mitch Trubisky is likely to go to the New York Giants, which does not exactly excite me.
Just perfect, Bill. Just perfect.
Not perfect for me.
Chef's kiss. Yeah, chef's kiss, though, in terms of just like, yes, this is the spiritual fit that we have been waiting for.
Oh, no. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is available, who I mentioned, you know, was competent for the Broncos a year ago. And I wonder if it's maybe like Carson Wentz, a guy who might get cut by the Colts reportedly, according to our Chris Mortensen, a guy who could be available via trade. You know, I feel like there are veteran options out there who can hold it there under the bargain. But again, I think it's the question of, what does this offense look like post Russell Wilson? Pete Carroll has for years been wanting to run the ball more and taking the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands. Does he extend that further if Russell Wilson is no longer part of that equation? And if you do that, doesn't it make sense to not spend a lot of money at quarterback and try to save money, use your money, use your draft picks elsewhere, if you're just going to have the guy hand off and throw the ball, you know, one or two times every single quarter?
And then there's the second order question of, like, who is this hypothetical quarterback actually going to pass to in Seattle, Bill? Because I'm seeing rumors everywhere, like, is Tyler Lockett going to be on the trade block? Are they going to keep him and DK Metcalf? Devontae Adams and Chris Godwin, both excellent receivers, have both been franchise tagged today. Mike Williams just signed a 3-year deal with the Chargers. So who's left? And what do those ingredients look like to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Seahawks and you are considering sort of making a transition to a younger core, the Tyler Lockett cap hit would be tough to deal, but maybe you take that opportunity because there's just not much out there at this position at this point. We're hearing rumors that the Cowboys are going to bring back Michael Gallup and Cedric Wilson. They're going to cut Amari Cooper, who suddenly went from being a guy who maybe seemed too expensive to the best wide receiver available on the free agent market by a significant margin, because otherwise guys like Allen Robinson have just had a terrible season. Odell Beckham coming off of a torn ACL. Then like guys like Russell Gage, like people who, if they were starting in your fantasy league, you would think the other person was not trying to actually pick up players and win on a weekly basis. I mean, you can find useful players there, but there are so many teams who are desperate to add another wide receiver. The Jets, the Browns, the Colts, the Jags, the Eagles, the Bears, the Lions, maybe the Falcons, now that Calvin Ridley is suspended for the year. All those teams might have been looking for a wideout or two in free agency, and now it's pretty much, in terms of healthy players, Amari Cooper or guys you wouldn't want to play in fantasy football.
Yeah, all those teams, incidentally, are the ones that feel like in the NFL, maybe just do these picks on auto draft.
That's also very fair. If you take Jalen Reagor before Justin Jefferson in the draft, you probably did not prepare enough for your draft.
All right, Bill, after the break, Aaron Rodgers.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Bill, now we're at the point where we talk about Aaron Rodgers, which, again, is the B block of today's show, because that's the way that all of this happens. Yes, Aaron Rodgers is staying in Green Bay. Yes, he is remaining the two-time defending MVP for this team. And we heard it from his Twitter account officially on Tuesday afternoon. We heard it via his surrogate, Pat McAfee, on his show a little before that.
Now, Aaron has tweeted, "Hey, everyone, just wanted to clear some things up. Yes, I will be playing with the Packers next year. However, reports about me signing a contract are inaccurate, as are the supposed terms of the contract I signed. I'm very excited to be back. Flex, hashtag year 18, with a heart."
So just get to the meaning of this, Bill, because this was the preeminent soap opera for like almost 2 years now. And what do you make of this decision in the end?
I think what this means, Pablo, on the simplest level, regardless of what the actual dollar amounts mean in the long run, is that the Aaron Rodgers saga is over. Aaron Rodgers is going to be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers in 2022, 2023, and probably 2024. So the idea that Aaron Rodgers is one trade or one bad game or one missed COVID test away from getting replaced permanently as Packers quarterback by Jordan Love, that part of this story is over. I think the Aaron Rodgers commitment here is to be the starter of the Green Bay Packers for years to come, which maybe that's what Aaron Rodgers wanted all along.
Well, we heard like the threats were like, maybe I'll retire. Maybe I'll go play for the Broncos or for the Steelers or something like that. But instead, he signs this deal that, by the way, got immediately put into question. And McAfee called it into question on his show. Like Ian Rappaport had reported that this was going to be a 4-year, $200 million contract, Bill, that would make it the biggest deal in NFL history, which I will remind people, Aaron Rodgers had also said via McAfee before that he did not want out of all of these negotiations, but maybe that's exactly what he got it, if you believe the Rapper reporting. So as someone who understands NFL finances better than anybody else that I know, like, how do you hear and read all of these financial details?
Okay, so the biggest contract ever. I think it depends on what you figure. Patrick Mahomes' contract is actually for $450 million. They can renegotiate beforehand in terms of getting him more money. But if Patrick Mahomes decides tomorrow that he's going to start throwing with his left hand and the Chiefs have no alternative, they're going to have to pay him for a long, long time. And with Aaron Rodgers' deal, I suspect there's some sort of flimsiness to it where, yes, he's averaging $50 million a year, but some of that money might be in 2025 and 2026 when Aaron Rodgers is likely to be retired. What we do know about this deal is that it reduces the Packers' cap hit. And what that tells us is that there's a big signing bonus early on in the deal. Teams give signing bonuses for two reasons. One, players get paid up front, which players like. It's always nice to get a, you know, $60 million direct deposit into your bank account, which is, I think, probably in the range of what the signing bonus might be for the Packers. But on top of that, you get to spread that money across the length of the deal. So Aaron Rodgers had 2 years on his existing contract left, 4 years in this new extension. You can max it out over 5 years. So over the next 5 years, the Packers can spread that over the five-year run. So a Packers team that was like $45 million or so over the salary cap before this offseason started has made some moves to clear up cap space. Now, by giving Aaron Rodgers the biggest contract extension on an average annual basis in the history of the National Football League, are actually going to reduce his salary cap number for 2022. If you want me to explain how that works, I can, but it's not interesting. It's just dumb NFL accounting. And they're going to be fine. The Packers will make space for Aaron Rodgers. They're going to have to get rid of some players. They might have to cut someone like Za'Darius Smith. They might have to let certain players go. But this is sort of like the Saints situation. The Packers are all in from this point forward financially. They'll deal with the dead cap money 3 years from now when Aaron Rodgers retires.
Bill, I got to admit that I fully trust your accounting of NFL accounting. It also sounds a lot like when people try to explain crypto to me. I'm like, I know there's a lot of money here. I know it's real money. I also can't tell if all of this is just fraud.
I don't think there's going to be a rug pull where Aaron Rodgers gets this contract and then immediately retires. But
a real pump and
dump.
But
if anyone was going to do that, it feels like Aaron Rodgers, as the ultimate riposte to the Packers threatening to get rid of him a couple years ago, that would be the case.
So what does he work with, Bill, with these Green Bay Packers then? Because look, he has Davante Adams, right, at receiver because they just hit him with the franchise tag on the same day. Sorry, Davante Adams, you've been reduced to like a footnote in this story. How does this team add up to you in terms of actual football talent?
I mean, it again feels a lot like the Saints, where they are a team, or they were a team with Drew Brees that was very good, consistently around 13 wins, making it to the postseason year after year, and then falling short. And I think if you're the Packers, you just have to hope that your core and that formula ends up producing a Super Bowl in the long run. There's nothing about Aaron Rodgers, nothing about this Packers team that's fatally flawed. They don't have some, you know, obvious significant weakness outside of their special teams, which was terrible last year, that should hurt them in the future. But the sort of the orange gets squeezed a little bit more year after year. I mean, the Packers this year were able to get big contributions from guys like Devondre Campbell, a guy who was signed to a one-year deal, ended up being a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker for them. They picked up Rasul Douglas off the street, ended up getting really impressive contributions from him as a starting cornerback. You go from being a team that gets lucky with those guys and isn't maybe depending on those guys to being a team that is depending on those guys. And I think over the next few years, as Aaron Rodgers does get more expensive, that's going to be the tough part for the Packers, is they have to do what the Seahawks didn't and really nail those draft picks year after year to supplement the core they have, which is really good, with cheap talent coming out of college.
And Bill, talking about how all of these NFC teams are trying to solve their quarterback issues, it brings us also to like the Washington Commanders, who have snuck into this news cycle too. What do you understand about how they were going after any of these big names?
The perennial offseason champs for decades now, the Washington Commanders, just have to be involved with this discussion. It's really fascinating because I think it speaks to how concerned the Seahawks are that they might be making the wrong decision here. Mm. Because according to reports, I think Grant Paulson, who works locally in D.C. here, had this first. Washington apparently offered Seattle 3 first-round picks, 2022, 2023 and 2024 for Russell Wilson. And the Seahawks apparently turned this offer down because they wanted to trade Russell Wilson out of the NFC. Now, this isn't the same division, Pablo, in terms of the NFC West. It's not even a team that the Seahawks are going to see all that often. And the Seahawks, by the way, are hosting the Denver Broncos and Russell Wilson during the 2022 season. But I think this speaks to just, number one, how desperate Washington is for quarterbacks. Number two, how robust the market is for those quarterbacks. And number three, how concerned the Seahawks were with keeping Russell Wilson away from them for years to come.
Which I understand, by the way, because the Seahawks don't want to be haunted by the ghost of Russell Wilson, although I think many of their fans will be nonetheless. But they send him away to the AFC. Left in the NFC, right, we have Aaron Rodgers, I get, in Green Bay. But after that, if the AFC is Mortal Kombat, what is the NFC as its quarterbacks are concerned?
Oh, boy. I mean, Kirk Cousins sort of figures as like a strangely compelling figure in the NFC this moment. It feels...
Wait, you're going to Kirk Cousins here. Because I get like Stafford is there too, and all due respect to him, but Kirk Cousins comes to mind for you.
I think at this point, Kirk Cousins is sort of the point of delineation. Like he's the Johnny Cage in this scenario. Like, you know, yes, like you would play with Johnny Cage if you had to, but he's not going to be anyone's first choice. And yet get Kirk Cousins.
No, terrible fatalities.
Terrible fatalities. Yeah. I would say maybe not even a good babality, if I remember correctly. Mm, but the reality is...
Flawed victory, in fact. Yeah.
Kirk Cousins might be the fifth best quarterback in the NFC right now, Pablo. And
Okay, hold on. Can we do that exercise? Just tell me the five quarterbacks that you got.
Please. Okay, so we'll see you on stage. Number one is... Let's see if we're on the same page here, Pablo.
Okay.
Number one, Aaron Rodgers.
Check.
Number two, Matthew Stafford.
Check.
Number three... Dak Prescott,
depending
on whether Kyler Murray has any baseball images in his Instagram or not.
Kyler Murray did notably today also unarchive all of the posts featuring the Arizona Cardinals. He unhid them from his Instagram account. So I think that's safer to assume that he's going to be there. Yeah, okay.
This was
so
very
four.
Important because I learned you can archive things on Instagram, which was very...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I just assumed he was uploading all those photos over and over again.
That's what I would have done.
Okay, so number four, Kyler.
Okay, and then is it right? Is it like Kirk or Matt Ryan? Is that? I mean, the tone of my voice there does admit defeat in this exercise. Like, yeah, I think you might have a point.
And that's why I think number one, Washington was so desperate to trade for someone like Russell Wilson because hey, you suddenly have maybe the third best quarterback or second best quarterback in the NFC if you make that deal. But also, this feels like a real have and have not situation happening in the NFC where, like, if you're in the AFC, there's like maybe 9-10 quarterbacks who could very viably be a Pro Bowler. And in the NFC, it's those four guys.
So if the chasm is wide, I mean, how wide open is the actual conference in terms of just the chaos that we might see?
I don't think it is wide. I think it's really down to the teams who have those quarterbacks because you have such a competitive advantage for half your games. I mean, yes, you know, the NFC West, Matthew Stafford will have to play Kyler Murray twice and vice versa. And that's going to matter. But if you're the Cowboys, you have a dramatic advantage over the quarterbacks in your division. If you're the Packers, Aaron Rodgers has a significant advantage over everyone else in the NFC North. In the NFC South, I mean, Matt Ryan currently is competing with Taysom Hill, Kyle Trask, or Blaine Gabbert, and Sam Darnold for the NFC South. Like, the Falcons are a terrible football team. Their best player on offense just got suspended for a year, and yet I kind of feel like they should be going for it because they're maybe the best team in that division if you consider the quarterback advantage they have on everybody else. So,
Bill, the NFC South is playing Frogger. Like, that is the video game equivalent. Just, like, trying not to get hit by traffic. Like, very, very 8-bit.
If an entire division can tank, the NFC South appears to be doing so. I'm not sure why. It's a long game happening here. But it feels like, you know, if you have one of those guys, you have such a leg up on the rest of the competition. And again, stuff will happen. The NFL's dumb. There'll be players who break out. We're not expecting. One of these guys will get hurt because that happens. But just on paper, I mean, the AFC looks like it's going to be such a difficult fight to win. And the NFC feels like it's down to four teams before we even get to free agency.
Well, you mentioned the Atlanta F words, Bill, and we do need to talk about this Calvin Ridley story at the very end here. The idea that here came Calvin Ridley, number one receiver in Atlanta, to somehow innovate, a very rare thing to do, innovate tragedy for a team that has seemingly seen every variation on the concept.
Yes. I mean, the Falcons have basically been cursed since they blew the Super Bowl loss to the Patriots. But even by Falcon fan standards, Pablo, this is a new one. Calvin Ridley, a young superstar receiver, sort of the guy the Falcons were hoping on to take the mantle from Julio Jones after they were forced to trade him by their own cap management ineptitude before the 2020 season. It's had a disastrous year. Calvin Ridley leaves the team, is reportedly dealing with mental health issues. It seems like maybe he's going to get traded before the 2021 season. And instead today, the story breaks that he is being suspended for an entire year for gambling on football. And this is a serious matter. I mean, the NFL does not want its players betting. This is the fifth time in NFL history, I believe, a player has been suspended for gambling on football, second in 3 years. And I think that's sort of the differentiator here, is that the NFL has really gone from being a league that basically wanted to deny any link to gambling to getting basically in bed with any gambling partner they can find. Right. The NFL wants to make billions of dollars from gambling over the course of this next CBA. And so I think as much as this is about fining Calvin Ridley or suspending Calvin Ridley, it's going to cost him a year of his career and $11 million of salary. This is about warning other players and giving them a reason to not do what Calvin Ridley did.
Yeah, I mean, the infusion of gambling money into the sport, Bill. We saw it at the Super Bowl, all of these commercials.
Yep.
I have the voice of J.B. Smoove dressed in a toga, like burned into my memory. And yes, I want to stare into the camera, also break the fourth wall and acknowledge that gambling money and sponsorships are everywhere across sports media too. But it does feel like a scared straight thing. You know, like, let us take the hammer to Calvin Ridley, to poor Calvin Ridley. Because he made a giant mistake. He committed the mortal sin dating back to Pete Rose that sports has always been extraordinarily serious about, compromising the integrity of the game, even though, Bill, the details that have been reported indicate that the integrity of the game wasn't actually imperiled, and it's actually kind of morbidly hilarious what actually happened here.
Yeah, it felt like the integrity of like a nice dinner at a steakhouse was imperiled by Calvin Ridley's betting. So combining multiple reports here, it sounds like Calvin Ridley went on his phone outside of the state while he was away from the team and bet $500 each on three different parlays, which are combinations where you're betting on multiple teams to win. A three-game parlay, a five-game parlay, and an eight-game parlay. And in each case...
Wait, Bill, an eight-game parlay, you have to explain for like the non-degenerates out there, like just what that indicates about how serious you are about making this money.
Okay, so Pablo, you flipped a coin before.
I have.
Imagine betting on a coin flip to come on one side or the other eight times in a row. Essentially, that's what Calvin Ridley was betting. Now, I have seen that happen, especially when I spent some time in Las Vegas in the wee hours of the morning. I've seen people betting hundreds of dollars on just coin flips out of their pocket.
But of course you have.
Not something I would recommend doing. If you want to make money gambling, first off, I wouldn't ask me. Second, I would not do eight-team parlays. I don't think Calvin Ridley was jeopardizing the future of the NFL.
Bill, it kind of felt like a lark, right? Like it's like a fun bet. It's not a bet that you actually expect to like get serious returns on in a realistic way. If it's betting on eight different games to pay off.
No, it was like someone putting money into an NFT.
By the way, I think we can all agree, I would love an NFT of this betting slip.
Yes, absolutely. If we can get the phone as an NFT, if we can get the betting slips as an NFT, I think Calvin Ridley can make pretty much all of that $11 million back very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. But the point being, like, this is something that was found out almost immediately. Right? Like, this is something that was not subtly hidden. There were not offshore accounts involved. This was on the books in every sense.
No, Calvin Ridley did this on his iPhone. The NFL's partners who monitor exactly this thing in case there's evidence of players betting on themselves or betting on their teams or betting on NFL-related activities spotted it quite quickly. It seems like it was almost comically straightforward. And the NFL, even in their statement, admitted, "We are applauding Calvin Ridley for coming forward with this." Maybe if he had bet it on someone else's phone, he would have got away with it. But I think, again, it's not really about Calvin Ridley jeopardizing the league as opposed to maybe just not being the smartest when it comes to getting some money down on the Falcons. And even that in itself might suggest that Calvin Ridley was wasting his money by betting on a team that has routinely lost more games than it's won over the past few seasons.
Yeah, it feels like the biggest mortal sin in the end, honestly. It was just that Calvin Ridley made the mistake of believing in the Atlanta Falcons.
Pablo, I promise you I'll never make that mistake.
Yeah. Bill Bardwell, as always, thank you for making sense of the totally nonsensical. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.